This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
DraftKings rolling out happy hour bet boosts each day this week. Today's happy hour superstar super boost hot off the presses is Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson to record 50-plus receiving yards in week one, boosted from minus 250 to plus 100. Head to DraftKings now to take advantage of today's happy hour boost available until 9 p.m. Eastern time. All right, final hour of Sharp Money. It's Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher. Amal Shaw, Dustin Swedelson are here. So let's talk a little more college football. Nick Aliotti is nice enough to give us some time. Pac-12 network analyst, longtime Oregon DC as well. Nick, we appreciate it. So let's just start, of course, exactly where everybody is in the Pac-12. Colorado goes on the road, gets a big win over TCU, now comes back to play host to Nebraska. I want to pick your defensive coordinator brain. What'd you see from Colorado's defense? Because that's my big hang-up is TCU, I didn't think they got great quarterback play, still put up quite a bit of offensive production. What'd you see from Colorado's defense?
Well, not much, really. Not much at all. And I think that TCU made a huge mistake. They were averaging, I believe, 7.1 yards a carry. Yep. And should have kept pounding the ball. Obviously, let me digress a little bit. Colorado was extremely impressive, particularly a team coming out under a new coach on that first drive and going down and scoring. I thought that was fantastic. But the jury's still out, obviously, on Colorado and Colorado's defense also. But TCU, I think, you know, they put up 42 points and lose. You shouldn't lose a game scoring 42 points. But my hat's off to Colorado, but the jury's way out on Colorado's defense.
Coach, let's take a look around the league. USC's offense looks like it's going to be elite, but can Alex Grinch and this defense be good enough when you play Penix, Cam Rising, Bo Nix, and some of these other teams, and including DJ Uiagalelei at Oregon State?
Great question. I think that offensively, you look at USC guys, and they're going to put up 40 points a game, it looks like, no problem. But those teams that they that you mentioned and that you play down the road have that kind of offense also to put up those kinds of points. You know, the first 2 weeks, USC really wasn't challenged. I didn't think they looked great against San Jose State. Didn't get a chance to see a lot of the Reno game. I'll go back, the Nevada game, I'll go back and look at that. But they really haven't been challenged yet. But defensively, they're going to need to take a big step, in my mind, from last year. And in the first game, I will say this. I thought not only was the defensive line not stout, but I thought USC's offensive line gave up way too much pressure. Yep. In that first game. They didn't look great to me either. So that could be an issue moving forward because they don't want Caleb getting hit too many times.
If we focus on USC's defense really quickly, when you watch it, do you think it's, and even go back to last year, is it a scheme thing? Is it an athlete thing? Like, what do you think the overall flaws are?
Well, everybody always wants to go to the athlete thing. They have enough good athletes.
Right.
What it is, in my opinion, men, is they're too gimmicky. I haven't studied them this year yet, but last year they were too gimmicky. Too many things, too many defenses, too many line movement instead of just lining up and playing your gap and letting guys know where they fit. And to me, that was their downfall. Just had too much in their defensive package. And when you have too much, you can't practice too much. And your guys can't play as fast. When you have less with great athletes, or better athletes than most people you line up against, just be sound, be simple, make sure they got that so they could play fast and end up playing plays instead of trying to out-scheme people. So I'm going to be honest, I haven't seen enough of USC's defense this year to be that critical. But last year, without a question, way too gimmicky.
I love that breakdown. Kind of staying on that theme a little bit, when you are facing a team like we saw Oregon take on Portland State over the weekend, destroyed them, from a defensive coaching standpoint or even from an offensive coordinator standpoint, Are you just minimizing in certain matchups where you know you're going to probably win comfortably, you're just better than the other team in terms of what you're potentially putting on tape for future opponents because you know you can just roll the ball out there and you're going to win those games?
Well, I think the very first game, yes. I think the very first game, you know, there's a lot of unknowns. And when you're when you outmatch a team, I don't think Oregon did anything that showed too much. They just basically ran their base offense. And I remember in our first game, even when it was a tough opponent, we just practice and do what we did all fall and all spring ball because you don't know what you're going to see. And oftentimes what you do see on tape, guys, really changes. So you have to get that feel calling a game from the press box. At least the good ones do after watching what they're trying to how they're trying to attack you, what you need to change up or what you want to stay with your defensive calls to combat what they're trying to do. But I think, yeah, I think in a game like that, Oregon was very simple, very vanilla, but wanted to showcase Bo Nix, Franklin, and their running backs.
Nick Aliotti with us, longtime Oregon defense coordinator, analyst for the Pac-12 Network. All right, let's take a big view of this conference as a whole. You know, we were talking about this the other day, which is I think, Nick, this conference is going to be very good. There's a lot of good quarterbacks. There's a lot of good teams. But is there a chance this league kind of cannibalizes itself because they're so good and they miss out on a berth in the college football playoff despite having teams that could be worthy to do it?
Absolutely. When they go to 12 teams, if this conference was this year, which it's not, we know moving forward, a lot of unknowns, but it looks like it's gone. But we won't go there. If it was next year, there's 7-8 really good teams in this league. And that is a very, very big issue. You better bring your A game every weekend because, you know, nobody's a cupcake, but there's probably – and I'm not going to name teams. There's probably about four teams that you play, five maybe, that those top of the upper echelon teams in our league, which I think are six or seven of them, are going to win. But then you're going to play week in and week out. You know, let's just take Utah. They're going to play SC. They're going to play UCLA. I don't know who they missed this year, but they might play Oregon or Washington because I don't have the schedule in front of me. They might play Oregon State. Those are tough games. And conversely, the teams I just mentioned have to play Utah. This is one example. So you really have to be good. You really have to have some luck. And you really have to be on your A game. And hopefully you don't lose more than two games because the type of schedule this year, a two-game loss, two-game championship, if you go 11-2, depending on what happens above you, you'd have a chance. But cannibalism is a real thing in this league this year.
Coach, great point by you. When you look at the top three teams near the top of this league, Utah, USC, and Washington, Oregon, you know the program very, very well. They were horrific against the pass last year. Can they improve enough to be able to slow down and allow Bo Nix and the offense to be able to do things? Because Penix, Caleb Williams, and Cam Rising – I don't know if there's a worse trio you got to face in any conference in college football.
No, you're exactly right. And then DJ, as we mentioned, is going to be tough. And Dante Moore, if they play UCLA, and I don't think they do, would be a tough out. You know, Oregon's a very good football team. They're one of the teams I think that has a chance. They're very good. I'm not a homer. I'm a realist. They're a good team. They were bad last year in the secondary. But I noticed when they played Portland State, it was five new starters with returning guys in the secondary. So they've upgraded there, or at least in their mind they have. I think Oregon will be in every game and has a chance to win this championship this year. Really, I need to see some of these guys play against somebody that's better, and that's going to happen this weekend. There's a lot better games going on this weekend, and so I'm going to have a better idea what these teams are all about.
Is there a better athlete in the country than the Oregon Duck with how many push-ups he had to put out there?
Yeah, but he doesn't do true push-ups. It's all bullshit.
All right. We'll get you out of here. Last minute on this. Amal mentioned Oregon State. I've been kind of high because I think DJU was given a short end of the stick in that scheme that he was offensively at Clemson. Did you see any of him against San Jose State? What'd you make of his play?
I thought he played very well, and I think he's in the right offense because Jonathan Smith's going to put the quarterback under center sometimes, line up with two backs, and they run the ball very well. Oregon State has thrived the last 2 years, and particularly last year, on running the ball, play action pass, playing good defense. They don't need DJ to win the game. Now, it's nice when he can, and I think he can, but they need DJ to manage the game and not turn the ball over, because they have a great offensive line, very good running backs. Jonathan Smith, I think, is a tremendous, he's not the coordinator, but a tremendous offensive mind and does a nice job with that offense, him and Lindgren. And I think that they will just continue to tell DJ, throw it away, take a sack, just don't screw it up. And if he does that, he's going to have a good year. And I thought he looked very good against San Jose State.
Nick Aliotti, Pac-12 Network Analyst. Good to talk to you, sir. Thank you very much.
Anytime, guys. I enjoy it. You guys have a great day.
You too.
Every time somebody says anytime, I want to try it. Like, call him tonight. Be like, Nick, what's going on, man? I'm just sitting at home. I got nothing going on. All right, we'll come back. We're going to talk about adding wins at the margins. We'll tell you what we mean here on Sharp Money.
Is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Got a lot of stuff up on the website. One of those things that you can get unlimited access to is our picks page. You also get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You can sort picks by sport, matchup, event data, more. Check out the top VSIN experts leaderboard. View betting records, profit ROI, see which VSIN expert has had the hot hand. There was a familiar name up there that I saw on the IG story a couple days ago. Yeah, okay, now he gets it. For VSiN Pro Picks, betting splits, and more, sign up today, $19, first month, VSiN.com/subscribe.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I just entered a Sky Moore over 43.5 receiving yards.
Just build Jesse Newell. If it doesn't come through, just build Jesse.
Well, it just feels like it makes a lot. I went back and looked. Juju Smith-Schuster missed a game last year, and in that game, Sky Moore went for 65 yards. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I like with player props is, like, going back and seeing when the situation is similar, how they perform. So without Juju, he took on that role, and he had a nice day. So I wanted to go over receptions, but I didn't see it at the book I had opened, and I wanted to bet it before anything happened. So going to roll with Sky Moore tomorrow. And, yeah, I had a very good college football week one. We'll see how week two is because I like way too many games
right now. Here's the thing.
Who do you like? Sorry, go ahead.
No. You asked the question already. Go ahead.
Well, I've got to whittle it down. This is the list. I keep this notebook with me at all times. Couple are crossed out. We'll whittle it down to probably 7 to 10, which,
by the way,
to you hate as well.
Your power rating goes down because it's not a yellow legal pad. I was a big fan of yellow legal pads when I was a producer.
I like the light blue legal pad.
Oh, I never used one of those.
Yeah. I've never seen light blue.
Yeah.
I'm exotic.
That's good.
I'm into the exotics.
I just totally derailed you with that ridiculous comment, so go ahead.
I told you I like first quarter betting for a lot of these teams. Right now I have to do a little research, but leaning two first quarters that I like, Georgia Southern. First quarter, -2.5.
Slow down. I'm putting these all in the VSiN.com's picks page right now.
No. Not official plays yet. Another one, first half, UCF, -2.5.
Against Boise?
Against Boise. What's that number up to?
3.5.
Okay.
Wait, whoa. Time out. We're going to have a discussion on this one right now. You just said you like the Knights in the first quarter against the Broncos.
First half.
I'm sorry. Okay. Never mind.
And then
I was going to say you're laying the game. You're almost laying the game number in the first quarter. Yeah.
And then here's an interesting one. Texas Tech in a bounce back spot, catching 6.5, 7, depending on where you get
Oregon.
It. At home against Oregon. Revenge game for the quarterback. Shuck. Yeah, Shuck. Is it Shuck?
Shuck.
I said Shuff.
Oh, they keep playing like this. We won't have to know his name in a few weeks.
Good point.
No, but my thing is I think they got caught, even though I think Joey McGuire is a very good coach. I think they caught against Wyoming in a little bit of a look ahead, not taking Wyoming as serious as they needed to. And I think at home they could cover against Oregon.
I mean, it's fair. The market moved in their direction initially, right? There's a reason why the 7 came off. I would say this. I'm very interested. They really – the per carry average will not tell the story – they could not consistently stop Wyoming's run game enough to get off the feet, to get them off the field, and that was their undoing in that game.
In the Mountain West, nobody ever says that. Craig Bowles' teams always struggle offensively, and it was surprising that they lose that game. But playing at 7,200 feet, we talked about altitude in Boulder coming up, could be a factor there as well. I don't know. That's a bad loss. The season opener, I think,
I know.
Any situation you've prepared. Amal,
it was ugly. Oh. I watched the whole thing. It was bad.
Go up 17-0. You think you're going to cruise?
They were up 17-0.
You think, well, yeah, 17-0. And then they just completely blew it out after that. No, it was really bad. And to the point, too, Chuck, I think I mentioned this to you guys. One of the preseason like Heisman like big movers, Chuck was about 200-1 at Circa, got all the way up to 60-1. Week one, you're dead.
It was a bad look all around, especially because everyone, especially in the betting circles, praises Joey McGuire and what he's going to be. It was just an ugly look in week one to do that. I guess they didn't want to show anything in the second half, thinking they could just sit on the ball, but they did nothing defensively. And Wyoming was not like – all that explosive, they just found ways to make plays.
When you're rolling out a 6'4" quarterback and like you know they're gonna run because that's what they were doing. Peasley is like the main guy, but they'd roll out their 6'4" big guy to just run quarterback power and you still can't stop it. Yeah, it was not really a great look.
One last game I want to run by you guys. We touched on it briefly. But I get Cal was impressive week one. But Auburn laying less than a touchdown in Berkeley, I know there's a lot of new parts for Hugh Freeze and company. But he is an offensive mastermind. And Justin Wilcox is a great defensive mind. But Hugh Freeze at designing offenses with whatever he's got, I trust him to figure it out there in Berkeley.
I don't think it's a bad play, but they threw for 203 yards in that win. They dominated against UMass. They were effective, obviously.
No, we're talking about Cal, though. Right? I mean, I think what you're talking about, right, is you think that
– I like Auburn.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, when you're evaluating – sorry, not to cut you off.
No, you're good.
But, like, when you're evaluating this game – like, do you look at Cal and what they did? Because they also brought in a bunch of guys transfer-wise, right?
Yes.
And do you, again, going back to your point, do you know? Do you know what this team is? And thus, maybe offensively, the way they took apart a North Texas team, you can do that against an Auburn squad that maybe we don't know that much about. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're good. I mean, my point is Cal generally – at home in Berkeley, they tend to play competitive
games. Very good.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially defensively.
Yeah.
Lower scoring.
Well, you know how many times I've sat there and I'm like, yeah, Washington's going in lane 4.5 here. No problem. I'll lay it. They're going to beat them. Next thing you know, you're sweating. You're going, damn, I'm down 28-24. I'm going to need now 10 points to be able to cover this game. I'm just not sure if Auburn going all the way to the Pacific – I mean, not the Pacific Northwest, to the West Coast – all of a sudden playing in this matchup, a little bit more offense seems like to be the case here right now with Finley and company under center for Cal.
I guess. I mean, they face North Texas. This is the SEC.
I don't disagree with you, but I'll tell you on that point, Washington struggled in the first quarter. Ohio State didn't look great. Michigan wasn't great in the first quarter. Georgia wasn't great in the first quarter. Alabama ended up playing well, but none of these teams came out of the gate blazing. And sometimes when we look at these portals, JVT, you see so many older players that are transferring, graduate transfers. Sometimes that has an impact. And not having that experienced quarterback can hurt you in certain situations.
Big look-ahead spot for Auburn, too. Samford coming up next week.
That's an in-state rivalry. Yeah. Head coach of Samford is?
No idea.
Chris Hatcher, two-time Harlan Hill winner at Valdosta State. I can always bring it back.
I just wanted to let it sit out there.
I can bring every conversation back to Valdosta State.
Okay, I'm looking.
Valdosta High School has probably had better programs than Valdosta State at times.
Well, they're the winningest high school football program in all of America. They could lose every game for 50 straight years and still be over 500.
What's their mascot?
They're the Wildcats.
Dude.
Too many Wildcats.
I've got Valdosta. Oh, no, it's the name of the mascot. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
You know what the mascot's name is?
No.
Blaze.
No, that's Valdosta State.
Oh, all right, never mind.
He's talking about Valdosta
High School. I'm all over the place. I'm sorry.
Blaze is a giant matchstick. He's a big flame head, and he's a matchstick.
Wow, that might be one of the better mascots out there. Tell you that much.
Real quick for you guys, what we talked about which teams impressed. Florida State was the one, but right now, don't you have to put Florida State as a top two or three contender for the national title?
Oh, absolutely, especially with what happened with Clemson. Right now, the probability for you to be able to win that thing, you're probably – I wouldn't say probably.
Oh.
There's a pretty good shot you're going to be favored against Clemson, even though you're on the road, right? We talked about this yesterday.
Yeah.
I think Burke said he made it. His power ratings were 3. I think there's a pretty good shot. It's at least 1.5 maybe on the road.
Yeah.
So you're going to be favored in that game. At the very least, they're well on their way to a playoff berth. And then who knows how they match up with the other teams that get there outside of Georgia. And we don't even know what Georgia is yet.
Did you watch your Miami Hurricanes?
Yeah, and I bet against them.
And what did you make of the Canes and Van Dyke?
I was actually more impressed with the new defensive coordinator who came over from Marshall. Because I thought Miami, Ohio,
job last year.
I thought Miami, Ohio was going to move the ball a lot more.
Can,
And the defense was super impressive. What was really refreshing to see from the Canes, from the real Miami, who won the game, is having skill guys pop, and the run game was just explosive. And that's something that's been an element that's missing, which is kind of ironic because the entire country goes to your backyard to get their skill guys, yet Miami's running backs and receivers over the last few years have completely underwhelmed.
You're absolutely right about that. You mentioned the receivers. Alabama's two of their best receivers, Calvin Ridley and Amari Cooper from Miami.
I mean, Teddy Bridgewater, Lamar Jackson, the quarterback. I mean, Devontae Freeman.
I don't know if Lamar's that good. He only won one Heisman. I mean, should have won a second one.
But really quickly, I was watching some of that game. Is it Kobe Young, like their receiver?
Yeah.
Guy's like 6'5 and 215. I watched him run a bubble screen. And then you see these Ohio guys like bouncing off of him, trying to get him. I'm like, holy smokes.
I didn't anticipate the defense looking as good as it did. I thought the offense would be improved. Van Dyke's thumb issue, obviously not an issue because he looked great, and they didn't have to show that much either because they got up so big.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, totally unfair observation, the interception was abysmal.
All right, so with all this said, I'm laying the 4.5 with Texas A&M this week. They're going to beat the hell out of them.
I don't know where I stand on that one. They got to go on the road. Now, Miami probably
there's
has
no
the
atmosphere.
No. They have the least home field advantage. A friend of mine took his son to the Middle Tennessee game last year. He took a photo. It was so funny. There was nobody in the stands. Absolutely
I'm
nobody.
Telling you right now, as someone who loves Miami since I was a kid, my dad went there. Like, if I get a dog, I'm naming him Dorsey. It's allowed.
No, I just didn't know the connection. That's all. Yeah.
So I've seen them in these situations too many times. Texas A&M is going to come in and be so much deeper, so much more impressive. Miami's still a very small private school with an undergrad of like 12,000. Texas A&M's paying players left and right, even though Miami's doing the same. But Texas A&M's getting bigger players in, I think. And I just think they have too much depth. They're going to overwhelm
Miami. I tell you this, and I know I teased this, maybe we can get to it later. I'm not a big fan of Mario Cristobal. Like, I just
he's
don't,
not a good coach.
He's not a guy that adds wins in the margins that will make the right decisions.
Hold on a second. Name me one person that is a fan of his coaching.
I like him as a recruiter. I think he's a very good recruiter, but he is not an in-game coach.
I would say the University of Miami because they hired him and gave him a lot of money.
No, they hired him because he is from South Florida and he played at the U. That's the reason they hired him, and it's going to be a mistake long term. He's the Miami version of Ed Orgeron.
Well, and because the head coach at the time was Manny Diaz, and he is at least an upgrade over that.
I also say it's a bad taste in my mouth. Last year, it went from we have a really good roster to it's all the players' fault, and I'm not a really big fan of head coaches who do that.
I agree with you, Brian Kelly. Please stand up. Real quick, the FSU schedule, that Florida game looks like it's going to be an easy win. The Hurricanes don't look like they're going to challenge. Florida State, baby, 12-0, going to win the ACC 13-0.
Last 30 minutes of Sharp Money coming up here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
NFL Betting Guide has been updated, and it is ready to go. I don't know what you're doing. NFL season starts tomorrow. We get updates for every single team, best bets from every single one of the on-air hosts here at the network, and really solid articles in terms of, like, I don't know, how to use the betting splits, contest strategies, more. Subscribe for as low as $19 if you're not one already, and you can check out vsin.com/subscribe for all of your options. Speaking of contests, you have not rocked your hat yet.
Yeah, I was thinking I was going to do it when Palm was here, and then I realized I was off the set when Palm was here. Let's see how it looks. We'll do it on the fly.
I have a question, though. People with short haircuts, you've got like a buzz cut. Do you actually ever need to wear a hat?
Looks good.
It catches the sweat for me. Part of the reason that I shaved my head is so that if I wear a hat, I can just take it off and you can't tell the difference. There's nothing worse 100%. Than hat head.
Yep. Oh, I
mean, there are a lot of things worse than hat head. It's a stupid thing to say out loud.
I know, right? Death being one of them, depending on how you die.
By the way, drowning, at least I don't want to drown.
Oh, in terms of ways to go, because at least from what I've heard.
The panic.
That, and I guess, like, so what? Like, you essentially, you run out of breath and then your body just goes,
it kind of sucks
in water. Yeah, explodes your lungs and, like, dude, it sounds terrible.
Yeah, which is the same thing, drowning, which was, I was going to say, waterboarding.
Yeah.
Same thing as drowning.
So it's like drowning, hat hair, and like everything else,
Then like when you get inside the nose pimple.
I've never had one of those. I've had in-ear pimples before.
How have you been so lucky in your life?
I don't know. I guess.
You must not pick your nose enough.
Or do I do it too much because I keep it clean?
No, I think it's the oils of your finger.
Oh, okay.
By the way, I'm surprised you didn't criticize me for the waterboarding comment. I figured you'd go full Lee Greenwood on me.
No, I'm staying away from that one. That is a controversial topic.
The other thing about short hair, too, it's the opposite end of the spectrum. If you have short, you have no hair, you can rock the hat, take it off whenever you want. If you got super long hair, you can rock the hat and take it off whenever you want because it's always just swept back. In my days, this might surprise you, used to have the super long hair, you know, down here. Like, yeah, that was a good – it's good hat here.
You guys are young, so it's not an issue. I've reached an age where now I don't even care anymore, where I walk out – like if I need to go to the grocery store on a Sunday morning, if I don't have the hat in my car – I don't care. I'll walk in the grocery store looking completely disheveled. Don't care anymore.
I do not care what I look like unless I am in front of human beings I care about, and strangers are not people I can care about. And nobody owns more comfortable gym clothes and spends less time at the gym than I do.
But no, the thing is, the problem is whenever you look your worst, you always run into a smoke show.
Honestly, sometimes I do go to the grocery store without brushing my teeth, and I always will be like, would love to chat it up with you, but we're going to have to be 10 feet apart here.
I run into a smoke show every day. I wake up.
Oh, look at well
good
played.
Answer. Well played.
I was going to say something, but I can't. All right. So you want to go Salah here first?
Yes.
So can you set this up? I'm sorry. My screen is freezing up here. Yeah, so what are we hearing from Salah?
Hard Knocks last night. I think Robert Salah is a bit of an interesting character as a head coach because the bravado sometimes comes across as fake, but I thought there was an interesting moment in the finale last night. This was Robert Saleh with some colorful language about something he doesn't like seeing from teams in the NFL.
One of the biggest pet peeves I have as a coach is when you're on a team that's not doing very well, and the opposing coach, whose team is doing well, walks up to you at the 50-yard line and says, man, you guys play hard. F*** you. I don't want to f***ing play hard. I want to f*** you up. That's the mindset. No one's talking about how we play hard anymore. Hating, and that's exactly what you can want.
So like from a leadership perspective, I can appreciate where he's coming from, because you can be about the process, but they're at a point right now where it's about results, not the process.
I get that. First of all, why are you even paying any attention, time, or mind to what an opponent's coach is saying? That is nonsensical conversation for the camera. I would be sitting there going, I'll tell you what, man, when you get fired next week, don't call me for a job on my staff.
No, I don't know. I kind of get it. There's certain things that bug you as a human. We're like, dude, like, stop. All right, get out of here. You know, there's been times over, I'll put it in the media perspective. I did a hit one time, the first time ever, where the guy clearly has never, like, listened to any work, and he's like, great podcast. You know, I listen to it all. I'm like, no, you don't. Don't do that. All right? You don't need to condescend me and do those sort of things. I get this here. I'm in, actually.
And then said Jonathan Von Tobel from Vizen.
Or Van Tobel. Yeah, from Vizen. I listen all the time. Yeah, exactly. No, I get it. I'm in. Little things like that irritate me. Don't try to, half-handed compliment me. I don't need that. Get out of here.
I have a quick question for you guys. Is playing hard a skill?
It's the bare minimum.
Right, and I think that's why, he's irritated. Because he's like, the other coach is literally saying,
it's a backhanded compliment.
Yes, I have no other positive thing to say about your team, so we're just going to say you guys play hard.
It's like, I've told this story before. Me and my friends growing up, if someone was trying too hard, we'd say they were Ecksteining it, because David Eckstein wasn't good, but he tried hard at baseball. Yeah. Essentially what he's saying is like, yeah, you should be playing hard, and you shouldn't be it's the Chris Rock. You're supposed to
take care of your kids.
Yeah, exactly. You're supposed to play hard.
It's like the one thing you can do is show up and just play hard.
Because by playing, it's condescending. By saying you guys play hard is saying, I don't think your team is very good, which also is kind of a shot at Robert Saleh as a head coach, saying your players play hard, but you don't have a good scheme for them.
You tease something, tell us what that was and what you're going
to
talk about.
He's ready to move on.
I'm ready to move on for sure, yeah.
Okay, all right. Sorry. Well, okay, I'll spin it like this. I don't think we've seen enough from Robert Saleh to understand who he is as a head coach in terms of what he does with decision-making, game management, and adding wins in the margins. And that's what I kind of wanted to talk about. So I know you found this, Dustin. 3013 put this out. The best decision-makers on fourth down. And look, I know people use this term. It's like a pejorative term. They use it incorrectly. It's not analytics, okay? It is decision-making that adds the most to your probability of winning a game. And you can actually measure these sort of things. And we have a list of guys who add the most win probability. I also think, you know what the big takeaway on this is? Look at this graph and look at this really quickly. Win probability percentage added. Notice how the best coach actually still doesn't add win probability. It is so hard in this league to do these things. Yeah. Matt LaFleur is the best coach in terms of win probability added, or in a different way you can look at it, doesn't make dumb decisions. So he is the best. Win probability added a negative 0.5. But essentially what he's doing is makes the correct call 65% of the time, doesn't put his team in position with boneheaded moves in terms of timeouts, going forward and forth, all of those sort of things.
Well, I think there's a couple of problems. I think coaches sometimes are so focused on X's and O's and don't realize the game management of it is such a crucial element of football. You know, it's like if you make $10 million a year but you can't manage the money, then what good is it? And it's a similar situation in the National Football League. I think there's a lot of people, let's say you're a chess player or somewhere along those lines, who would understand the basics in football of risk versus reward, time scoring situation. It is unbelievable. I've had this conversation with Matt Eumanns. Every single situation, everybody that I know out here, they can make it with their eyes closed. I'm like, you ask any better, they're going to be able to tell you, this is what you should do in this situation, when to go for two, when not to go for two. One of my worst criticisms of Barry Odom when he got the job, they were playing in a bowl game. They were down 16. They scored to go down 10 with 14 minutes ago. He kicks the extra point. My favorite line was one time, Virginia scored against Wisconsin with 5 minutes to go. They were down 16 minutes, 16-6. And they kicked the extra point. A friend of mine goes to me and goes, is there not a single person on the entire UVA sideline smart enough to say, hey, coach, we got to go for two here. There's 5 minutes left in the game.
So to your point, I think what's interesting about their list is there's two guys up top who you would call more progressive head coaches in LaFleur and Sirianni as the best. But kind of shocked to see guys like Mike McCarthy in there.
Yep.
Matt Eberflus, who I know is younger, but he's still a defensive head coach. You'd expect him to be more conservative. Like, I'm kind of surprised to see those guys, and even Vrabel.
Really quick, I want to leap on something you said. Conservative doesn't also, like, when you talk about adding win probabilities on fourth downs, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean you're only going for it. It's just making the right decisions on fourth downs.
So, so whether you are or aren't, you're right. Okay, that makes sense.
I'd also say this does speak to organizations that I think have done things the right way, because I'm willing to bet some of these guys aren't literally making decisions.
Yes.
Guys have headsets now up in the booth that are, hey, this is, in terms of win probability, this is what you should do here. And the head coaches are now finally listening to those guys.
Yeah, but there's a lot of them that I've listed over the years, because I had written to some teams in terms of, like, you need a game clock manager and where they make mistakes. So Michael Lombardi and I talked about this one time. So let's say, for example, a team is punting to you and you have the lead. The Chiefs lead the Raiders by 14 points with 11 minutes to go. The Raiders are punting on 4th-and-17 from their own 40-yard line. I said, if I'm the Kansas City Chiefs, I do not send anybody back for the punt return. Mm-hmm. And Lombardi goes, why would you do that? I said, because you have a chance of a fumble. I said, all I need is possession of the football, and I'm guaranteed to run 2 minutes off the clock. But they would never do that because it's an insult to their staff and their team and their ability, saying you're suggesting or implying we're going to fumble the ball or we're going to turn it over. To me, they don't take some of those risks out of scenarios. There are times, I'll give you a perfect example, guys will send punt returners back with less than a minute to go in the half to fair catch a ball, and the other team has less than two timeouts. Why are you doing that? There's no need for it. They don't understand this thing at an elite level.
And in fact, if you're not at your own, like, one-inch line, the more yards actually helps you for opportunities to gain first down.
Absolutely.
I would say, too, looking at this list, surprising. Brian Daboll's, I think, one of the better head coaches, that he's not on here. Belichick not on this list as well. I mean, again,
well,
it's
last
10.
Two seasons.
Yeah, it's last two seasons. Okay, so Daboll makes sense. Belichick, it doesn't, right? And, you know, we'll see if that's going to be the case. And maybe he's 11 because these are just the top 10 guys.
Yeah.
But interesting that some of the more respected names, Tomlin, not on the list.
Yeah, but sometimes, well, Tomlin, remember he had the bad decision against Indianapolis where he didn't go for it in the end of the first half? But to me, some of these guys, the decisions are predicated upon who their team is, the talent. With Sirianni, some of the times where you could take risk with a Jalen Hurts, you can't do that if you've got some of these other quarterbacks. I think the talent of your team also plays a role into the decision-making sometimes.
I'd love to see if my guy Staley would have been on that for the first year, not last year, because he lost his identity. We'll be back here at Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The best Thursday of the year is coming up, and it's all about NFL opening night. Football's back, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is hooking up new customers with a can't-miss offer to celebrate. Place your first $5 NFL bet and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Don't wait till kickoff to get in on the hype. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code SHARP. New customers get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5. It's code SHARP only on DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. When do you think when are we getting Kevin Hart on this show?
On this show? One of the hosts have seen any of his movies.
I've seen one. There we go.
I saw the one with The Rock.
There you go.
Saw the one with you did one with Will Ferrell where they're cops or something.
Yep.
Right? That's
so there
a thing.
We go. Yep.
Did I make that up?
No, I don't know if they were cops, but they went to jail together or something like that.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Hard time or something?
Oh, man, look at you. Movie guy all of a sudden.
I've always been a movie guy, but I'm really good at, like, talking about a movie, and you think, oh, I've seen it. And I'm like, no, I haven't.
You just saw the trailer?
Yeah.
So that's how I am with, like, news, like, real, like, political news and stuff. Everything I know about the news, I read in a Yahoo News headline of an article that I didn't open.
You know, so this is one of my conversation things, is what I like to do. I might be giving away a secret here. Is if somebody brings something up, because I'm a headline reader as well, but somebody will bring something up that I've seen, I go, oh, no, I've got a bookmark to read later. Tell me about it. So it makes me sound smarter than I really am.
See, what I will do is I will lead them into it, let them give their opinion, and go, oh, yeah, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense.
Oh, the other strategy, this is my favorite one. I'm really bad, and I feel like a jerk about it. I'm really bad with names. I forget names of people that I introduce to all the time, right? And so what my strategy will be, this might sound bad because I might have done this to some of the VSiN folks, especially if I'm out with Isabel, she'll be my shield, where I'll go,
oh, have to.
This is Isabel.
Yeah.
And I'll have them introduce themselves, so then I hear the person then reintroduce themselves.
It's the best.
Boom. And then
it's the best way to find out.
I don't have that problem. What I do is let's say I'm meeting one of you guys, and I don't remember your wife's name is Isabel, I say, I apologize. Could you please give me your name again?
Okay. Amal. Literally the second week of Sharp Money, we had an issue with you not knowing someone's name.
Yeah, I know that, but I would just ask them.
Now, in fairness, you did know their name. You just weren't confident you knew their name. You asked Wyatt.
Oh, there's that, too.
He sends Wyatt a text, says, hey, Wyatt, is this person's name? I'm not going to say who it is.
You don't remember my name?
And Wyatt yells out, yes, Amal, that person there, that is their name.
Oh,
and blew up
no.
the spot.
In this case, I couldn't do it because it had been a while since I'd worked with them, but I had worked with them quite a bit. No, but if I'm meeting somebody for the second or third time, I just go over and say, hey, I apologize. I don't remember your name. Could you please tell me what it is?
Oh, I lie. I'll go, hey, I don't have your number. Can you put it in my phone? Dude,
I'll be like,
it doesn't work.
I'll be like, yeah, it's 911.
Can I also say really quickly, I flipped this. I'll never say it to somebody's face. When you accidentally do the nice to meet you, and they go, oh, we've met before,
yeah.
You're now the jerk.
Yes.
Okay? I didn't mean that. And for you to now come back at me and tell me, oh, we've met before, screw you.
Yes. Well, so one time I had somebody say that to me, and they go, oh, you don't remember? I go, apparently you weren't that memorable.
Yeah, you didn't say anything interesting.
Can I read you? I know this is – we're going to get back. I have a sports betting thing. Can I read you this headline that popped up that amazes me? Look at this. 11,000 runners were disqualified from a Mexico City marathon because apparently all of them took shortcuts. Whether it was cars or other modes of transport, 11,000 people were cheating.
I mean, what's a marathon? 26 miles?
26.2, yeah. Yep.
I mean, I get it, man. I would do it too. But here's the thing. What'd they look like? Was it guys who looked like me? You're like drenched in sweat at the end,
this
breathing heavy?
First of all, this doesn't add up.
I didn't know whether there were that many entrants into a marathon.
That's 11,000.
There were 30,000 apparently total.
30,000?
Yes. But also, how do you lose track of 11,000 when you get to the point?
It's not like it was like 1,000 or 200.
It's like a few hundred of 30,000. It's a third of the field.
11,000. That's like a minor league baseball stadium.
Using cars. So there's 11,000 cars at some point taking these people somewhere.
Anyone use Uber? Is that how they got caught?
Hold on. In their defense, it was probably run in Mexico City, right?
It was. Yeah.
30 million people.
That's a good point. Yeah, 11,000 really
dropped
in the
elevation.
Bucket.
Yeah, elevation. Yeah, Mexico City, very high elevation.
Speaking of elevation, the Denver Broncos, who get to play host to the Las Vegas Raiders. I had no real transition there at all, but I just wanted to say that the Denver Broncos are now down to, what are they at, 3.5-point favorites?
I will not bet that game because it's, like, offensive to my eyes.
Yes.
Well, forget all that. JBT, what's your – and Dustin, I don't believe – and I'm a big Russell Wilson fan – and I think Sean Payton's a great play caller, great coach. I just don't understand why everyone thinks this
Gotta
team is –
got to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Got to see
so
it.
So it's part of the reason why I brought it up because we're getting closer to week one. That was one of the few line moves that I was like – because it got to remember to like 4.5 in some spots, 5. And I guess it was around maybe some Jimmy G stuff or the Devontae Adams injury. But, like, I didn't understand how high that got.
I think they stink, the Raiders. Like
The Raiders are in contention for the top pick.
I can definitively say
– Bet 14-1 to do it.
Nice bet.
I'm with you on that bet. Yeah. Where'd you bet that?
Here.
Here?
Yep.
All right, I got to get on that. I think I can definitively say they stink. With the Broncos, I'm not as high as everyone else, but I'm willing to admit, like, if they reach their potential, like, it's there. It's definitely possible.
Yes.
I just don't – I need to see it happen before I'm going
to
believe it.
I did bet them to make the playoffs, Broncos, plus 185. That is a bet ahead.
By the way, a couple of things real quickly. I think Arizona, the Raiders, and – forgetting one other team.
Tampa Bay.
Bay. And even the Rams maybe. But I think with Stafford, they'll win a game or two. I think those are your teams that are going to be in contention for the first overall pick. By the way, real quick, Can I throw Dustin under the bus because it's a horrible top 10 list?
I mean, you're talking to the wrong guy because I can relate to this.
I love this list.
So I brought an iced coffee with no cream up here today.
Oh, well, here's mine.
It was for you.
And did you kid?
And Dustin goes to me, he goes, I go, well, it was for JBT. He goes, oh, then I won't take it. I go, he doesn't know I brought it for him. So he took it.
I go, well, if he doesn't know that you got it for him, he didn't order it, I'll gladly take it.
At least you remember the order 2 days later.
And honestly, he got sugar in it, so I
didn't ask for sugar. They just put it in
there. Still didn't remember.
I didn't ask for sugar. It comes with it.
This country wants everyone to have sugar.
All right. Hey, that wrapping it up, Amal. Great job, man. It was a good show. Now let's get to the top 10 list because I know he's done.
All right, we're doing my my top 10 cartoon crushes. So things kicked off with Kim Possible at 10. Then we had Helen Parr / Elastic Girl from The Incredibles. And I know there's a lot of controversy over Elastic Girl only being number 9, but I've never actually seen the movie. I just know that the cartoon character is bonkers, the only way I can describe it. So that brings us to number 8. And this is a cartoon that's near and dear to my heart from the 90s. It's from Bebe's Kids, Tamika. She is dating a cartoon character. I don't know his name, but I believe he's played by Cedric the Entertainer's voice. And it was a movie on television that I saw one time. Couldn't believe what I was watching. I mean, their catchphrase is, we're Bebe's kids. We don't die. We multiply.
Okay.
And she brings, I believe, her nieces and nephews on a date. And I just love her as a cartoon. Just look up Jamaica,
solid.
Bebe's kids.
Yeah, sure. Solid.
All right, number 6, Lola Bunny. Lola Bunny is a
obvious
Looney Tunes character that is odd because she's an animal, yet I feel something for her and think she's attractive. And she does look a lot like Bugs Bunny, similar to like when you think your friend's sister is hot, but she also kind of looks like your friend. That's how I feel about Lola Bunny. Also, I don't think I've ever seen Lola Bunny in anything other than Space Jam. She's not in any other Looney Tunes.
No, that's all she is. So you were part of the people who were mad that she was less sexualized in the LeBron James sequel to Space Jam.
She was still pretty. All right, and then number 5. I've been very honest about my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle love as a child. I think my mom almost went to therapy because anytime I walked over a sewer cap, I used to pray out loud that the Ninja Turtles would come up and take me away from my family to live with them and become a Ninja Turtle. And therefore, April O'Neil, who is the news reporter in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, was a huge crush of mine. And she comes in at number 5 on my cartoon crushes.
So I just pulled up an image because like my whole thing here is now showing them all like what he's missing out on. But I also just because the internet's a cesspool pulled up what is clearly like a fan made image of her, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Been doctored a bit.
Yes.
I thought I was annoyed with you for this segment. I realized I'm more annoyed with him for pulling these things up. I'm like,
I'm trying to keep you up to date. You're sitting over messing with your microphone so everybody can hear it. I'm trying to get you.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
You know what this is? This is like a conversation we had off air before the show. You're essentially going through a real world version of when people send you Instagram reels that you don't want to see. And that's what happens to me and Amal with our friends. They send us Instagram. Well, actually, for me, it's not even friends. It's a literal stranger send me Instagram reels to watch. And JVT's just doing that for you in real life with this list.
By the way, because I'm married, I have to. So I have to sit there and be like, no, it's hilarious. Let's watch them together. Yeah,
it's a great one. It's so good. I didn't see it 3 weeks ago. I promise.
Yeah, I opened them up on purpose because then at least it says seen.
Yes.
And then afterwards, though, but then I'm quizzed on them later. I'm like, what are we doing?
Honestly, it was so many I couldn't remember.
Yep.
By the way, don't you find it funny for people that have an iPhone when they have the read receipts on?
For the text messages, absolutely. I do like for guest booking for the show when they do, so I know when I'm being ghosted. I can name a few names if you'd like.
Go.
Yeah, go.
That's a top 10 list.
Yeah, 100%.
Top 10 media members that are dead to Dustin because they never responded.
Oh, that'd be great.
No one's ever dead because I'm always desperate and I'll always pop back up a few months later.
Okay, then how about top 10 media members that are on Dustin's S list?
Here's a list that didn't reply yesterday. Damon Heward, Mark Dominic, Joe Banner, Sage Rosenfels, Chad Pennington, Dusty Dvorak.
Wow.
Dusty called the game Monday night.
Yes.
Chad Pennington, what are you up to?
Yeah. There was a couple other names you had there. Brock Heward. I really like Brock Heward. He does a great job on Fox.
No, not Damon Heward.
Damon Heward, forget about it. Can we ask him about what happened to Luke Heward, his son? 5-star, went to Washington, transferred to another school.
Yeah, like, where is he now?
He's like a Portland or Portland State or somewhere.
Chad, you're NFL Legends Community Co-Executive Director. You're that important that you can't respond to Dustin?
In fairness, I think I canceled on him once. So
also, let's go. You're like 70 now. Can we update the haircut, please? All right, we're all done. Sharmani, we'll see you tomorrow.